Hello, everyone. This is Ruth McCauley, bringing you news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 10th. We begin inside with some local news. Decatur schools disappointed by test scores by Valerie Wells. And we are working with the Decatur Herald in Review for the moment. The end of No Child Left Behind has meant escalating consequences for schools and districts that missed the mark have ended. Ed Moyer, Chief Instructional Officer for Decatur Schools, gave a State of the District report to the school board at the Tuesday meeting and said that the law's replacement, the Every Student Succeeds Act, is still too new for districts to have received information on how it will affect those schools. "We just don't know yet," he said. "We're still figuring it out." Part of his report to the board on Tuesday was centered on the results of this year's Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers, or PARC, tests. The test is taken electronically, which has been something of a challenge, and he said the method could have affected results. He is more a fan of the Measures of Academic Progress test, which has stood the test of time and which the district also uses. "Decatur students have shown progress, but results are not what he'd like to see," Moyer said. "In areas of reading, language usage, and math, there are noticeable improvements at the middle school grades, especially, which is encouraging, as middle grades often have the lowest gains. At the same time, 4th and 9th grades dropped by 9% and 7% respectively in English language arts." "It's hard to identify single causes for the drops," Moyer said. "This is the second year we've taken the test electronically, and some of its variance in the test conditions and the way things are asked." High school students will begin taking the SAT test this year instead of the ACT, which is the college entrance test juniors took under NCLB. And Moyer said that test is much more compatible and a better fit. "The overall numbers are highly disturbing," board member Alita Graham said. Moyer agreed, and added that 88% of Decatur students enter kindergarten below their age level and achievement, making it difficult for them to reach grade level. "No one likes standardized tests as the only measure of learning," board member Fred Spanis said. In other business, the board approved hiring Philip Tapscott for the position of Assistant Director of Buildings and Grounds. The board also approved interorganizational agreements with the Decatur Community Partnership, Webster Cantrell Hall, and Youth Advocate, and approved a resolution authorizing the issuance of a notice to quit and the filing of a forcible entry and detainer action regarding the district-owned property at 4530 Williamsburg Court. District spokeswoman Maria Robertson said the reason for the legal action was discussed in closed session, and she could not comment further. Our next article, also written by Valerie Wells, "Teens Serve as Election Judges." Studying government isn't the same as participating in it, and some Eisenhower High School students got an up-close look at democracy during the election on Tuesday. Sam Mills' Advanced Placement United States Government class students served as election judges. "We've done this in the past, and for my students, it's hands-on experience with government," Mills said. "They get to see an election in action. It's not just going and voting and seeing it from that end. They get to be a part of an election." All the students in the class are seniors, but not all of them are 18. "Normally, an election judge has to be at least 18," said Jennifer Neal. "But because of the situation, the 17-year-olds were allowed to be judges, too. They registered voters, checked people in, and did all the same things the other election judges did, and all of them said they'd do it again." Election judges have to undergo 3 hours of training, which includes the admonishment to not wear anything partisan on election day. Drew Laney, who sported a Bernie button at school on Wednesday, left it at home on Tuesday. "I was surprised at how appreciative people were to see a young person at the polls," he said. "It was a very long day," they all acknowledged, "but the turnout was much larger than normal, and staying busy made the time go faster." Laney also served as an election judge during the primaries in the spring. "I got to see all the different types of people who come in, and it was really diverse," said Alexis Hurley. "I also got to see politics a little more than just sitting in a classroom and seeing it. I actually got to register about 35 new people." About half of those new voters were first-time voters, and there were older people who had just never voted, she said. "We talk about voter turnout in our class, and it's typically really low compared to other democracies in the world," Mills said. "I think you saw in this election a lot of people showed up." Turnout at Early's polling place, the Macon County Health Department, was almost twice what it was last election, she said. "It was a really good experience, I think," Neal said. More than 1,200 people came through her polling place. "We had a lot of older people come through who had never voted before, and they were really passionate about wanting to vote this year." Aiden Gist served at Mount Zion Convention Center, a new polling place this year. "The best part about it was being thanked by the veterans," he said. "I thought it was fun talking to the people." Mills said that he plans to take his students to Washington, D.C. in April, and the class is raising funds for that now. Anyone who wants to donate can reach him at Eisenhower. Our next article was written by Ryan Voiles. Home bakers in parts of Macon County may soon be able to make some money off their goods. An ordinance that would authorize home kitchen operations in unincorporated sections of the county is set to be voted on by the Macon County Board in its monthly meeting at 5:30 p.m. today in the Macon County Office Building. The ordinance, which has been referred to as the Cupcake Law, would allow all non-perishable baked goods to be made at home by bakers and sold directly to customers. Sales are limited to $1,000 per month, and no registration or permit from the County Health Department is required. The ordinance passed the county's Siting Rules and Ordinance Subcommittee on October 27th by a 4-1 vote. The ordinance has faced stiff opposition from the county's health department since it was first brought up earlier this year, with department officials saying such an ordinance would increase the risk of foodborne illnesses, as well as put in an unnecessary burden on an already financially strapped health department. Supporters of the ordinance have argued it would encourage small business growth and allow some residents to make a little extra income. One item that's not on the agenda is approval of the budget for the fiscal year that begins December 1st. A tentative $72.2 million budget was approved by the board at an October 16th meeting. But a question that has lingered over the final budget was whether voters would approve a sales tax increase, which was proposed to help the Macon County Sheriff's Office retain law enforcement officers. The money would have brought in an additional $2.5 million per year, but voters soundly defeated the proposal Tuesday, despite the possibility of job cuts in the sheriff's office. Sheriff Thomas Snyder said he does not plan to implement any layoffs right away and is hopeful of another solution. Board members have in the past expressed hope that some additional cuts in other departments or new funds could be found to prevent the layoffs. Among the new funds are those that are expected to be received next year related to the construction of wind turbines in the northwest part of the county. Now, I must tell you, there is a picture of some delicious-looking cupcakes at the end of this story. An awful lot of the Herald and Review today is about the election on Tuesday. We're going to jump back to the front page and pick up a couple of those items. Our first is written by Paul Swiech, I guess, S-W-I-E-C-H, who is a Lee News Service writer, this out of Bloomington. Stay calm after election, mental health experts say. Take a deep breath and open your heart. That was a message from Central Illinois mental health professionals on Wednesday. Earlier in the day, Hillary Clinton supporters reacted to the unexpected election of Donald Trump as president with fear and anxiety, while others resorted to vandalism as Trump supporters celebrated. This country has been through a lot, said Chris Cashin, licensed clinical professional counselor with OSF Behavioral Health, referring to the long, divisive presidential campaign and Wednesday's protests. We have a coarsened discourse in this country, Cashin said, but this country has been through tough times before. We'll get through this, too. Violence or vandalism are never the answer, he added. They may feel cathartic, but in a state of heightened political tension, they are the worst things you can do. I urge everyone to take a deep breath and put everything into context, he said. People who are sad, anxious, or angry should talk with someone they trust, advised Melinda Roth, advanced practice nurse with the Center for Human Services, CHS, McLean County's mental health agency. A family member or friend, member of the clergy, or mental health professional are among resources. We need to draw together within our community and support each other at a time when a lot of people are feeling distressed, Roth said. Self-care also is important for people who are struggling. Eat healthy, get outside, exercise, tend to your spiritual needs, get adequate sleep, take breaks when needed, and do things that make you happy, Roth and Cashin said. Surround yourself with people you love, Roth said. I urge people to think globally and act locally, said Cashin, who for years was a member of the Center for Human Services Crisis Team. For people who are angry with the election results, volunteering in your community is always a good idea, he said, adding, become politically active locally. Engage in constructive activism, he said. Do things that you find meaningful. We tend to hang around with people who think like we think, Cashin observed. When we do that, we are less likely to understand each other. That creates conflict and tension. Talk with people who think differently. We really need to try to understand one another's perspectives. Both also advise that people who are scared about being deported need to seek personal, legal, and spiritual assistance. He, Mr. Trump, will be president, not dictator, Cashin said. Stay informed and surround yourself with supportive people, he and Roth both said. People of different sexual orientations who feel marginalized after Tuesday's election also should seek support from family, friends, and advocacy groups and remain politically involved, Roth said. Despite the election, the culture is more inclusive, Cashin said. Stay involved. Okay, those are always good words. From Dan Petrella, the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Illinois GOP dense Democrat supermajorities. At the end of a long, blistering, and unprecedentedly expensive campaign season, the results of Tuesday's races for the Illinois General Assembly did little to alter the political stalemate that has led to the state's historic budget impasse. Republicans gained 4 seats in the state House and 2 in the state Senate, but Democrats retained control of both chambers, which means Republican Governor Bruce Rauner still needs their cooperation to pass any portion of his pro-business, union-weakening turnaround agenda. He's made that a prerequisite for signing off on any tax increases to balance the budget. The state hasn't had a complete budget since he took office in early 2015 and is currently running on a stopgap spending plan that's set to expire after December 31st. Nothing has changed in the basic dynamics of the conflict, said Chris Mooney, director of the Institute of Government and Political Affairs at the University of Illinois. Both sides can say they had some wins. As a bright spot for Democrats, Mooney pointed to Susana Mendoza's victory over appointed Republican controller Leslie Munger in the race for the office that controls Illinois' checkbook. However, the loss of four House seats means Democrats no longer have a 71-member veto-proof majority in the 118-seat chamber. But because they've had the minimum number of votes needed for an override, Democrats have had to vote as a unified front to block Rauner's vetoes, something they failed to do on several high-profile occasions. Riding a dual wave of campaign cash from Rauner and a handful of wealthy allies and strong downstate support for GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump, Republicans defeated four House incumbents in southern and north central Illinois and the Quad Cities. Democratic State Representatives John Bradley of Marion and Mike Smitty of Hillsdale were among the incumbents who went down to defeat, losing to Benton businessman Dave Severin and Savannah Mayor Tony McCombie, respectively. Republicans saw one of their own incumbents, State Representative Dwight Kay of Glen Carbon, defeated, but that loss was offset by picking up the seat held by retiring State Representative Jack Franks, a Democrat of Marengo, who was often a weak link in the House Democrats' supermajority. While Democrats maintained their supermajority in the Senate, they lost two seats to Republicans, cutting their membership to 37 in the 59-seat chamber. State Senator Gary Forby, a Democrat of Benton, was the lone Senate incumbent to see defeat, losing to Dale Fowler, the Republican mayor of Harrisburg. Republicans also picked up the seat long held by State Senator John Sullivan, a Democrat of Rushville, who didn't run for re-election. Jill Tracy, a Republican former state representative from Quincy, ran unopposed. Unsurprisingly, each party had its own interpretation of Tuesday's results. House Speaker Michael Madigan of Chicago, who also leads the state Democratic Party, put out a statement late on election night saying that the unprecedented millions Rauner and a handful of allies spent to bankroll the GOP's campaign efforts and the popularity of Trump outside the Chicago area, quote, created a difficult environment for many Democratic candidates, end quote. Voters stated clearly that they wish to maintain a wide Democratic majority in the Illinois House of Representatives and maintain a strong check on Bruce Rauner and his anti-middle class agenda, said Madigan, who was the target of Republican campaign attacks across the state. Democrats value the voters' trust, and we will continue to protect the middle class and those who don't have access to billionaires and lobbyists, Madigan added. His Republican counterpart, House Minority Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs, reads the results differently. By handily breaking the supermajority, Illinois voters sent a strong message that it is time for Democrats to join Governor Rauner and legislative Republicans in enacting reforms to lower property taxes, create more jobs, address the pension crisis, and place term limits on the career politicians alongside a balanced budget, Durkin said on Tuesday night. The state Republican Party said in an election night memo that the financial backing of Rauner and his allies and the party's unified anti-Madigan message helped level the playing field in a year that should have favored Democrats. Meanwhile, Rauner, who has been out of the public eye in recent days, attempted to stay above the political fray. This has been a long, grueling campaign cycle, both nationally and locally, the governor said on Wednesday. For the good of the people of Illinois, let's put the election behind us. Let's come together and focus on the future and improving the quality of life for every family in our state. The first opportunity to do that will be next week when lawmakers return to the Capitol for the start of the fall veto session. Our next article is an AP Wire story out of Washington, and it carries the headline, Trump begins to play catch-up on transition to White House. The true test now begins for Donald Trump. The Republican president-elect paid little attention to transition planning leading up to a stunning victory, with 72 days before he takes control of the executive branch. Trump and his senior team on Wednesday immediately began the Herculean task of picking a cabinet and tapping hundreds of appointees to senior roles in key departments: state, defense, homeland security, commerce, and treasury among them, many requiring multiple security reviews or Senate confirmation. They have a long way to go, said Max Steyer, president and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, an outside group that was working with both campaigns on transition planning since the summer. It's imperative to have the right people brought in fast and they're prepared. Steyer described the transition as, quote, a point of maximum vulnerability, end quote, for the nation. As president-elect, Trump is entitled to get the same daily intelligence briefing as President Barack Obama, one that includes information on U.S. covert operations, information gleaned about world leaders, and other data gathered by America's 17 intelligence agencies. 17. Whoa. Trump's senior team huddled privately to begin a more focused period of transition planning. The group included the transition chairman, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and Republican National Committee chairman Reince Priebus. Vice President-elect Mike Pence and daughter Ivanka Trump's husband Jared Kushner, among others. The team is putting a premium on quickly filling key national security posts, according to people familiar with the conversations, but not authorized to discuss them publicly. It's something that's got to be pretty close held until the president-elect is ready to begin to announce appointments, said Bill Hagerty, Trump's director of presidential appointments, who declined to offer any details on a timeline for Trump's first personnel moves. A chief of staff is traditionally appointed in the initial weeks after an election. Hagerty said the transition from one administration to another, quote, in essence, is a $2 trillion takeover when you think about it, end quote. A small transition team has been meeting since early August to discuss legislative priorities and plans for taking over agencies. While Christie provided Trump with weekly updates, until now, the campaign and transition operations functioned as relatively distinct entities and in different cities, Trump's campaign in New York and the transition team in Washington. That's fascinating. Another AP Wire story, this out of Jefferson City, Missouri. Republicans' governorships rise to highest mark since 1922. Republican power in state capitals will be at its strongest levels in nearly a century when several newly elected governors take office next year. A remarkable election that propelled Republican Donald Trump to the White House also resulted in Republican wins in a trio of governorships previously held by Democrats in Missouri, New Hampshire, and Vermont. The only potential Republican setback came in North Carolina, where Democratic Attorney General Roy Cooper declared victory over Governor Pat McCrory in a race that remained too close to call on Wednesday. If Cooper's slim lead holds, Republicans will control 33 of the 50 governor's offices, one shy of their record set in 1922. Republicans also appeared likely to maintain control of about two-thirds of the state legislative chambers, meaning that in many states they will have the power to enact whatever policies they choose. In Missouri, for example, newly elected Republican Governor Eric Greitens has pledged to enact a right-to-work law barring mandatory union fees in the workplace, a long-sought priority of GOP legislative leaders that had been vetoed by Democratic Governor Jay Nixon. Newly elected New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu also could be paired with a Republican-controlled legislature. The GOP held its majority in the state Senate, and House Republicans also claimed victory. Republicans last saw such a sweep in 2002. In Vermont's gubernatorial election, Republican Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott defeated Democrat Sue Minter, a former transportation secretary for outgoing Governor Peter Shumlin. Scott campaigned on making government more efficient, but also appealed to voters in the liberal-leaning state by embracing abortion rights and gay marriage. The Republican Governors Association spent more than $50 million on this year's races, primarily targeting seven states. That almost doubled the estimated amount of money coming from the Democratic Governors Association, though Democratic candidates in some states outraced their Republican opponents. And that's all the time we got for this first half of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 10th. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more news. I hope you'll be able to stick around and join us then. Hang tight.